Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 70. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show because this week it's all about Cassian Andor. As always, I'm Mikey B and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hi everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hyperball.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Inferno Squad, which I have started to listen to, which is pretty awesome.
It is. I've got it. It is sitting waiting for me to read. I am very busy. San Diego Comic Con literally wiped out all of my time to be able to do anything other than concentrate on San Diego Comic Con. Spoiler alert, though, guys, I wasn't even there, and I was still just as busy as if I had been there.
Were you just as busy or just a little bit less busy?
No, just as busy. Like, I wrote 4, 5. I must have collectively written about 5,000 words. And that, I'm not done. That's the problem.
Well,
a lot of the stuff still left to come is like follow-up.
You need to finish that. Or you know what you can do? Instead of reading, you know, Inferno Squad, you can download it through Audible and listen to it while you do all your other work.
But I can't. Like, if I'm having to, like, get in the zone and write, and some of the work I've got to do is transcriptions of interviews.
Oh,
so yeah. I can't really listen to an audiobook while I'm transcribing interviews, so...
Okay.
Wah, wah.
I will say, you know, this is a mini-spoiler, not really, mini-spoiler, because we all saw the trailer for Battlefront 2. Mini-spoiler is, it actually starts at the first Death Star, not at the second one, which is what I thought it would start at.
What?
Yeah, it actually happens at the first Death Star, and our main character survives that along with Lord Vader. So it's pretty cool. Like I'm like, wow, this takes you way back before, and obviously it's going to take lead up to Last Jedi stuff and whatnot. So So I'm pretty stoked on the on Inferno Squad. It's good so far. I'm only about 2 hours into the audiobook, just because that's what I've been able to listen to while driving to and from work. And
only 2 hours. Well, but considering audiobooks last like forever.
Well, it's like 30 hours, so I'm,
Yeah, like I said, they last forever.
I'm 1/15th the way in. Anyway, let's talk about supporting the Resistance, Danya.
Yes, so if you guys want to support the Resistance, we have launched a Patreon, so you can check that out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks of signing up is that we have a Discord chat where you can just come in, talk to other fans of Resistance Radio, us, whenever we are jumping in and out of there. I just set up a hockey text channel on there, so if you actually want to come, and talk hockey with me, and pretty much half of the Discord channel is on there as well, where we've been chatting back and forth, you can come and talk hockey with me. As well as Star Wars. Maybe we'll draft our fantasy Star Wars hockey team in there. That would be fun, I think. You can also listen to us as we're recording episodes in the recording studio. Join us for movie nights when we do our movie commentaries. And our After Dark episodes, where we basically just stay off topic the entire time. So if you love it when we go off on tangents, those episodes are going to be for you. We have loads of different levels that you can pledge at, so whether you can only pledge a couple of dollars up to, I think, 10, it's whatever. But if you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do also have merch for sale. We've got t-shirts and button packs available on our website. But again, even if it's not for you and you can't support us, signal boost us, send us to your friends, pimp us out. We're easy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to say, I've just planned out our next After Dark episode, and I want to kind of talk it up because I'm kind of excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
So our next After Dark episode is going to focus on, it usually tends to focus on stuff that is not canon and stuff that doesn't really fit in the show. It focuses on a 10-page comic called Into the Great Unknown. It was released in 2004, so it's part of the Extended Universe by Dark Horse Comics. But just a quick synopsis about it. Basically, Han Solo and Chewbacca go into hyperspace blindly because they're trying to escape from, Star Destroyer. And because they don't wait for the nav computer, they end up on Earth, planet Earth. And long story short, Han Solo gets killed and dies. And thousands of years later, archaeologist Indiana Jones is looking for the Sasquatch, which is really Chewbacca, because Wookiees live a long time. And they find the body of Han Solo, and unfortunately, Harrison Ford says it seems oddly familiar, and they decide to leave. So just so you know, like, this is a really interesting Dark Horse comic from 2004, and we're going to focus all on it. In fact, I will make sure everyone who has Patreon will be able to get a copy of it, because there's digital versions out there for free and everything. So it's a really cool comic, and we're going to tear it apart, which is awesome.
Tear it apart, yeah. It should be fun, though.
Han Solo and Chewbacca. Like, come on. Oh, it's Harrison Ford for both of them.
Fordception?
Something like that. Cool, right? Mm. All right. I think it's time for the news, Danya. Yeah?
I mean, I guess so, yeah. That might be an idea.
So this week, we got a really cool new photo. I guess it's a press photo of Rey with her lightsaber with Finn and Rose. So no Poe, but I'm wondering if this is going to be the new trio? Maybe? I think this is really cool. New Finn, Rey, and Rose. What do you think about this photo, Danya?
I mean, I like the idea of it. Obviously, having two women in a squad instead of two men and a woman, like, that's pretty cool. But, I mean, I guess it all depends. We don't really know how this is being sort of split up. It could even just be that they're meeting together, because it's Crate in the background of this. Yeah. So it could be them meeting up at the end. So we know that Rey is going to be with Luke. And Finn and Rose are going to be off on missions together as well. So, you know.
Well, that photo that we're talking about with Crate in the background, this is also the not final artwork of one of the Star Wars books that are coming out. Specifically, Heroes of the Galaxy Fight the First Order. Packed with facts that you need to read from DK. So I think this picture is, a composite of some graphic designer threw together for the possible cover of, this book from DK Books. So actually, I'm posting it right now so you can see it. So the Heroes of the Galaxy one. So it's literally that picture, and it's just the cover of the book. The other interesting part is other new photos we got, which are not as surprising, just because I think Rose is probably the bigger surprise, I guess, in some of the photos, is we also get an activity book with over 50 stickers. The artwork is Phasma. And two different troopers in the background, including a flame trooper in the background. So it kind of mirrors the same thing that we're seeing with the heroes, which is, Rey, Finn, and Rose. I'm just wondering if they kept it to three and three because, that's all they had room for.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a nice symmetry to it as well. It just looks nice when you keep it to three characters. Also, we totally know that Poe is probably off on his undercover missions or whatever he does, where he's sent out to go get maps, he's sent out to go do stuff. Poe is sent out on his own a lot mm-hmm. to go and do stuff. So,
well, it's okay though, because Finn's wearing Poe's jacket, so we got him there in spirit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's keeping Poe's jacket so that Poe's got a reason to come back to Finn. That's exactly, no, I'm sorry. I had to go there, apparently. oh no, this is, I'm in a mood today, apparently.
you really are. Moving on. So this is actually some interesting news that I was really excited from Dave Filoni. So Dave Filoni revealed Kanan and Ahsoka's history, which is, I think, is pretty awesome. I wish this was actually seen in Rebels, but it wasn't. So Filoni talked about there was an undisclosed meeting between Ahsoka and the Bendu, which is really cool. And he even shared some backstory between Kanan and Ahsoka to kind of fill in some details of Ahsoka being a mentor to Kanan in many ways that she wasn't really on the show. So I'm just going to read this dialogue back and forth that he posted. So as Ahsoka, even at a young age, you were gifted with the lightsaber, but without training and discipline, those skills fade. Kanan gets up again. He's a bit dispirited. Kanan responds, I haven't had to fight with my lightsaber very often. For a while, I chose not to. You are afraid to use it, said Ahsoka, and I understand. Kanan responds, I've been teaching Ezra as best I can. I want him to be the Jedi I am not. I couldn't be. Ahsoka responds, and I want you to be the Jedi that you are. So this is a really nice kind of like mentoring moment between Ahsoka and Kanan that I wish we had been able to see. And I think it would have brought, well, I don't think there could be any more depth to Ahsoka's character. Like, there's a lot there from the Ahsoka book and everything, but it would have given us another dynamic to Kanan's character with his struggles of becoming a Jedi. Like, we always knew it was there, but this is like on the nose of that struggle. What do you think about this, Danya?
I have a lot of feelings about this. I got really emotional. Bad. Yeah, good feelings. I got really emotional over the idea of Kanan and Ahsoka just being this close and like this kind of heartfelt sort of scene. And I mourn for it a little bit because I would have loved to have seen this in Rebels, or I'd love to see this relationship specifically explored. Just as like this idea of them helping each other, guiding each other, like just particularly from Ahsoka's side, like helping him and mentoring him. And just like it's just a beautiful moment. And I miss Ahsoka so much. Like, I still think, obviously Rebels still works without her. And I feel like in order to propel them to where the show needed to be and where the characters needed to grow and improve and come into their own and step up and lead, it did require Ahsoka to either take a step back or just not be there or not be involved as much. And so I get it. From a narrative standpoint, I understand why Ahsoka has disappeared. But at the same time, there was like a presence to her, a weight, like there was something about her that just gave the show so much gravitas. And I miss her so much because I love her as a character. And like, this is the kind of thing that I would have loved to have seen explored more, is how she interacts with, like, the other Jedi. More like this, more, like, quieter moments, where they're allowed to be vulnerable. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting with this? I do think, I feel like Ahsoka is kind of like, in The Force Awakens, the reason we didn't have Luke Skywalker was because he was such a powerful character and he would have stolen the movie. The same thing is true with Ahsoka. I feel like when Ahsoka showed up in Rebels, you were so excited for Ahsoka that everyone else kind of almost took a back seat and you wanted to see. And we, like, everyone wants to see what happens with Ahsoka. So I feel like they had to do something with her the way they did. The nice part about this is you know that there's more story to Ahsoka there. And I think when I saw this about Ahsoka, I also was remembered back to like when Ahsoka was first introduced. And we talked about this a little bit on the Ahsoka episode. But when Ahsoka was first introduced as a Padawan, you know, Snips, if you will, people didn't like her at first. Like, this female alien Padawan to Anakin Skywalker. Like, people said it felt out of place, considering we never saw it in the movies. But when I think of Anakin Skywalker, I think of Anakin from the Clone Wars. And Anakin wouldn't be Anakin without Ahsoka by his side, at least to me. Like, that's how I always see it. So Ahsoka has quickly become one of my favorite characters in all of official Star Wars canon. And I think most of us on the show would probably agree with me. Yes? Danya?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'd agree.
Okay. Well, moving on. The next bit of news I'm actually really excited for, because just like we got with Force Awakens, Journey to Force Awakens, Lucasfilm Publishing has revealed their Journey to the Last Jedi tie-in books, which I'm really excited for because we're getting quite a few different ones. We're getting a Canto Blight Bite novel, which it looks like it's by four different authors, and it's going to be kind of a short story type book, which reminds me of some of the other short stories that we got for Journey to the Force Awakens. We're getting a BB-8 as an ATE cookbook, Awaken to the Force of Breakfast and Brunch, and I'm beyond excited for this BB-8 book. No cookbook fun there? Because I think that's
no,
awesome.
I love cookbooks, and I just it's the pun. I'm gonna get it just because of the pun. But yeah, no, I love ridiculous nerdy themed cookbooks. I own far too many than I probably actually need, and I can't say that I use all of them.
Come on, BB-8, Awaken to the Force of Breakfast and Brunch.
No, I know, I just said, anyway. I love the pun, and okay. I'm gonna get it. Own so many nerdy cookbooks that I probably don't need, but I still keep buying them.
So, biggest news about the books is, really what it comes down to is the new Princess Leia book. So there's gonna be a Leia novel. Obviously, we have Christy Golden's Inferno Squad, which was just released this week. And like I said, you can get it on Audible. Claudia Gray, who I think both you and I have said we love Claudia Gray's novels for Star Wars. She is doing Leia, Princess of Alderaan. So it's going to be probably the most anticipated book of this new lead up. So it's going to be focused on her. We're going to go ahead and get, the Phasma novel also, which is going to be pretty good. And there'll be, like I said, a couple other tie-ins, usually comics, but like I said, there'll be a Canto Blight one, which I'm excited to see, because it'll be like, it reminds me of some of the old Star Wars books of, like, Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina and stuff like that. So I feel like that's what it'll be. Because it does look like it's going to be a couple short stories.
I swear I saw one that was going to also include, maybe it was just someone on Twitter talking about it from somewhere else, but they were talking about one that was going to include Rose and her sister.
Don't know. But they also talked about the Thrawn novel being changed into a comic also. Yeah, from Lucasfilm Publishing, this one doesn't have it, but that doesn't mean that there won't be one. I wouldn't be surprised if all the characters get a short story like they did in like the Luke, Han, and Leia novels that we got in Force Awakens. I'm trying to remember what they were called. Okay, so in Journey of the Force Awakens, we had Lost Stars was one of them. We had Moving Targets, which was a Princess Leia book. We also had Smuggler's Run, which is a Han Solo novel. And we also had the Weapon of the Jedi, which is, you know, a Luke Skywalker book. All those books were fairly short. They weren't like, they were junior reader books. But they are worth reading if you're an adult too. They're really quick reads. I think I read all three in an afternoon, if I remember correctly.
I was right. Found it. There is one called Cobalt Squadron. Let me see if I can find.
So Danielle is right.
I was right.
While you look that up, I do want to talk about the next piece. Did you find it?
Yeah, I'm just seeing if it's got... Yes, so Rose will be a main character in Cobalt Squadron, a book written by best-selling author Elizabeth Vine and illustrated by Phil Noto. Cover art shows Technician Rose and a couple of pilots, as well as the ships they fly into battle against the First Order. But one of the other pilots on here, let me just drop this into the Discord chat, is very, very obviously Asian, and she looks very much like Rose, which should suggest that that is Rose's sister, as we know that she's a gunner. So, yeah, wait for it to load. I'm very excited for this, because I also love Phil Noto's art. Yeah. So I'm excited for this one. I remembered seeing that cover and going, I'm pretty sure that there was one that was going to have Rose and her sister in it. And I'm like here going, maybe I'm running my mouth off. Maybe I'm like, maybe... maybe I'm exhausted. Maybe San Diego Comic-Con made me see things that I wanted to see. No, not going crazy. Apparently this is a thing that's actually happening. But I don't know that that is actually Rose's sister. So don't quote me on that as it actually officially being Rose's sister. I'm just speculating based on the fact that we know that Rose's sister is a gunner. And it's very obviously centered around a squadron. So it would make a lot of sense if it featured Rose and her sister. So, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Books! More books! Bring all the books!
And there's lots of children's books, obviously, coming out
too. Yeah, there's one, Chewy and the Porgs, that was, that I saw going around as well, which looked adorable.
I do like the, a golden book, the, you know, the little children's golden books, you know, the kind of cardboardy ones. Tales of the Force, the artwork on that just looks absolutely awesome.
Yeah. No, just, like, some of the books is just, are just adorable. Like, the artwork. Mm-hmm.
I also like the Art of Coloring, the Keepsake Coloring book.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of cool things that they're coming out with. So, moving on, one of my favorites... things that have come out this week, which is something I said I wanted to happen as soon as it was announced. We have Chewy and the Porgs.
Yeah, I said, right?
I know.
I just dropped a picture. But for anyone listening, I just dropped a picture of the Chewy and the Porgs book.
Because the Porgs are so adorable, and you distracted me, Danya.
I know, terrible.
You are terrible. Anyway, moving on. The next bit was when we talked about the Han Solo film being taken over by none other than Ron Howard. I was so excited. I made a joke. I wonder if they're going to do it like Arrested Development, where he's going to go ahead and narrate it. Well, our friends at the Nerdist have released a video of the original Star Wars trilogy narrated by Ron Howard. And it's amazing. So you watched it, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Like, it's been picked up by 100 different places already, but it's kind of amazing. If you haven't seen it, check it out. I'll link to it in the show notes. But it's just really good. Like, you have to see it. It's awesome. You know, it starts off with, like, Luke Skywalker, you know, or Han Solo, the smuggler, and then it goes to, like, Chewie, his best friend, Leia Organa, his girlfriend, Luke Skywalker, his brother, the father-in-law, Darth Vader. You know, just like you saw with Arrested Development. And it's called Arrested Rebellion, which I think is just... It's just perfect. It's exactly what you'd expect if Ron Howard did Arrested Development in Star Wars. And it's awesome. Like, I just love it. Any other thoughts on this, Danya?
Nope. It's just a funny, like, if you want to just have a good giggle for a couple of minutes, it's a good video to watch. It's exactly what you're expecting, basically. I want in my life an Arrested Development narrator, like, narrating over my life.
Alright, I'm gonna
I can drink water. She couldn't drink water.
All right, so I actually just rewatched it right now. So basically, there's the scene, the "I love you and I know" line from Empire Strikes Back. That is the best part. So Leia says, "I love you," and then it's Ron Howard says, "He knew he couldn't say no, but he also knew he couldn't flirt in front of her father because Darth Vader's right there." So then he says, "I know," and I'm like, "This is amazing!" It's like the perfect, like, it's the perfect blend of what you know from Star Wars and the internal monologue that is Ron Howard in this. So I will tell you, if it's, I know the Han Solo film is not going to be like this, but I would love, like, for the director commentary to be this, like, when you get the the Han Solo film Blu-ray, it'll be like the comedy commentary from Ron Howard. I think it would be just amazing to be something just like this. So I thought it'd be fun. Anyway.
No, it is. It's absolutely fun. It would be nice, like, even if it isn't a full commentary that's done with, like, Ron Howard narration, Arrested Development style, it would be really nice for them to have, like, a short video Arrested Development style.
Like, even, like, a behind-the-scenes making of the film or something,
yeah.
It would be definitely fun. Moving on, we got some details on the third Star Wars Land, or Galaxy's Edge, ride that actually didn't make the cut, which is interesting because when you saw the original artwork for Galaxy's Edge when it was first announced a couple of years ago, we saw Banthas on it and we said, oh, that's gonna be really cool. And basically what was gonna happen was Disney was gonna have a Bantha ride, like kind of callback to the original pack mules through Nature's Wonderland that closed at Disneyland decades ago. So you would be able to fit 12 to 16 people on this elevated giant Bantha, and you get to ride a Bantha, and it would go on a trackless journey through the entire land with opportunities to take photos in different spots. I've seen this before. Like, you have this at, for those who know Disneyland or Disney World, in the Magic Kingdom at Disney World or Disneyland, the mainland, think of the trolley car on Main Street and stuff like that. Or in Toontown, they had the trolley, the Toon trolley there would take you around so you can see the whole park, you can see the whole land and the whole thing. Kind of even like the main, it's kind of like the railroad even that lets you get around the park and see different things. So this is kind of what that plan was originally supposed to be, but I guess they got rid of it and just didn't make the cut. So we're only going to get two rides in Galaxy's Edge, and we won't have any furry Banthas, which I'm okay with, but I'm also kind of sad because I would have loved to get on a Bantha, because they'd be all going single file to hide their numbers. No?
Oh, God. I mean, it is a little disappointing that we're not going to get it, because the idea, in theory, is actually really cool. But I also guess it makes a lot of sense if you've got, like, a big ride that has to kind of make its way through the land, like the entirety of Star Wars Land, and to be able to stop and be able to take pictures. And I'm just thinking, like, logistically speaking, how that would work. Especially with the amount of people that are going to flock to Disney just for this land. It's going to be overcrowded, like, all the time. So I'm wondering if they, in order to maximize on the space that they've got to allow for more room to move and to not take away space from, like, other things that they might want to put in. Something like that, which I would imagine is a big space taker. Just didn't make the cut because of that. If you had, like, a big
elephant size something.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, you could respond to that in a second. I will say that they also mentioned that Disney is holding back an expansion pad for one more Star Wars Land attraction, which could be added after the new trilogy has concluded based on a future movie sequence. So as of right now, there's still space for one more ride. Now, I don't know if they're just talking about the Walt Disney World version or both of them, because I will say I've seen the construction at Disneyland, and it's pretty much maxed out all available space unless they're planning to make a pad there that's blocked off or something. But right now, the Disneyland version,
it's probably going to be for World. Let's be realistic about this. The one that's going to have the most amount of space in order to be able to do that is Disney World.
Oh, yeah. Disney World has a ridiculous amount of excess space, and they have plenty of space for it. Disneyland is constantly fighting against premium land because it's in the heart of Anaheim, California. So that's kind of that's where they're fighting with it. So it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing. But it'll be nice to kind of bring life back into Hollywood Studios in Walt Disney World with Star Wars Land. And obviously Disneyland will have Star Tours and Galaxy's Edge. So you'll have two Star Wars themed things you can check out. So I'm excited for the Star Wars Land, Galaxy's Edge in general. Obviously the hotel will be something really cool too. But we'll wait as we get more news about that.
Did anyone ever watch How I Met Your Mother?
Yes, actually, I just rewatched the whole thing. It's kind of okay. Amazing.
So every time anyone talks about Star Wars Land, in my head, all I hear is Marshall going, everyone's seen Star Wars, Ted. The only people who haven't seen Star Wars are the people who were in Star Wars.
Because they lived it.
And that's because they lived it. And basically, I'm like, we're going to live Star Wars every damn time.
I can't wait to live Star Wars.
Yeah, that's basically what goes on. Every time anyone mentions Star Wars Land or Galaxy's Edge or whatever you want to call it, I'm still calling it Star Wars Land. But basically, that's what I hear in my head every single time. just in case you wanted insight into the inner workings of Donya's brain, it's not all hockey all the time.
New news that just happened. We now have John Powell to score the untitled Han Solo film. So we now know who is going to do the music for it. John Powell's most well known for his Bourne series, the films with Matt Damon. He also did Shrek, Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2, as well as How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2.
I love the soundtrack to How to Train Your Dragon.
I know, same here. So I love those soundtracks. I even love the Kung Fu Panda ones too. You know, and Shrek, actually. I was just talking about Shrek earlier today. So John Powell is going to go ahead and score this. I'm actually really excited because we had two different composers for Rogue One. Alexander Desplat was supposed to do it, and I was actually really excited for it because he did the Harry Potter films, the last two. And we obviously didn't get that. We ended up getting... now my mind's freezing because I just remembered. Who did the Rogue One soundtrack? I actually did it in 4 weeks.
It's that brain fart.
Michael Giacchino did it. There it is, that brain fart right there. Michael Giacchino did it, and he did it in 4 weeks. And I actually really like the Rogue One soundtrack. I like the Krennic theme. You know, the Krennic theme that's repeated throughout the whole thing. That motif is really nice. I will say, unlike The Force Awakens and unlike the original trilogy, obviously those are all John Williams, nothing stood out like Ray's, you know, scavenger theme or some of the other ones. Like, nothing really stood out significantly in the Rogue One soundtrack. So I'm excited to see John Powell take over for the Han Solo film because there are some really great themes and motifs in the Shrek and Kung Fu Panda series soundtrack. So I'm excited to see John Powell doing this. Hopefully we don't have a dropout and having to go ahead and do, you know, another person take over again like we had with Alexander Desplat. What do you think about this, Diane? Just John Powell, you know, taking over and doing a score for us.
I mean, interesting, like really interesting choice. Because it's, I mean, they have to at this point start getting a little bit more out there with who they're choosing to score these films, because obviously they can't keep going back to the same well over and over and over again. So it's, yeah, it's different. I like his work. In fact, like, even mentioning the Bourne series, like, I'll admit, even though not the biggest fan of the Bourne series, but I do enjoy it. Like, yeah. The soundtrack to it is really good. But, like, some of the others, like, yeah. It's just that it's the How to Train Your Dragon bit that makes me go, oh, yes, he'll be really good for this. That moment when the thing you're most excited about for the Han Solo movie is the score. And isn't that telling?
Yeah, no, it really is the score. The really nice part is, in the official press release from StarWars.com, is it says the untitled Han Solo film will be scored in the style of the original Star Wars movies, but retain Powell's distinctive voice. Which is really nice, because Rogue One, I will say, had a very abrupt and different style than the original Star Wars films. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but I feel like it was very different. Wasn't bad, but it was very different.
Yeah, it was, so, and I mean, I feel like for me it fit. The idea of it fit because it was a very different film, and also by virtue of the fact that It needed to set itself apart because it's the first of the standalone films. It needed to very clearly make a statement to be like, I am not in the main continuity of Star Wars films. I am not a film that you are going to be familiar with. I'm different. And that's what it needed to make a very large statement for. And so, yeah. It fit for what they needed it for me. So.
Yeah, no, it did. It did. Like I said, I liked the Rogue One, and there's some definitely really good motifs in it, so it's definitely different. But I think it's time for our spotlight topic. None other than Cassian Andor. As we continue on with our Rogue One-themed character spotlight, I know we took a detour last week, but I'm a fan of Cassian Andor. I'm actually really excited to do this week's episode just because Cassian, you know, is one of those things we didn't really get much of him anywhere else other than the novelization of Rogue One. And then we did see him in Rebel Rising, the book. But other than that, he is purely a Rogue One character, and he has a prominent role there. In fact, he's the first character you meet in Rogue One, which I thought was really, really cool as we kind of travel through the different planets and stuff like that. In Rogue One. So, first of all, Cassian Andor was a intelligence officer in the Alliance to Restore the Republic. He was also given the title Fulcrum, which we know was held by someone like Ahsoka as well as Agent Kallus. So he has definitely gone undercover and he releases information to different rebel cells going by the codename Fulcrum. I want to talk a little bit about Cassian Andor's relationships that we see in the film and elsewhere. Donya, what did you think of Cassian's relationship with K2SO? I feel like this relationship is very special between the two of them because obviously he's a droid, and I know you guys talked about K2SO's relationships with everybody else in comparison to the different droids in the Star Wars series, but from Cassian's standpoint, you know, Cassian treats K2 a little bit more like property, but he's also a friend. You know, he is a reprogrammed Imperial droid. So what do you think about his relationship with K2?
I mean, I think it's one of K2's most fascinating relationships. I figured that we were going to talk about it in more detail when we did come around to talking about Cassian specifically. But the relationship between the two of them is really, really interesting to me because it's that question of whether K2's loyalty is something that's been programmed into him, or if it was an initial programming and the loyalty is kind of like grown from there. Because there's something just about K2's steadfast loyalty to Cassian that is basically like he would destroy anything else if it was like going to harm him. Like,
well, you have examples of that. Like at the end of the film with K2's, you know, heroic death scene, he literally puts up a last stand to protect, obviously, Jin, but it really, I feel like it was more to protect Cassian.
It was more so for Cassian.
Yeah,
like so Cassian, he has a respect. Yeah, he has a respect at that point for Jin. And yes, the sacrifice is still for Jin as well, but undoubtedly it was mostly for Cassian. Yeah. Which is the ultimate sacrifice as, I guess, Cassian's droid? Because that's technically what K2 is. It's a really difficult line to, like, draw because we don't know how much of him is programmed to be loyal to Cassian versus how much is, like, how much is machine learning versus programmed intelligence.
And that's personalities. Like, we, you know, in Star Wars, there's a lot of different droids that we've come across that we've had spotlights on. You know, mm-hmm. you guys talked about them two weeks ago. We had like AP-5, C-3PO, R2-D2, BB-8, Chopper. They all have their own personalities. And the question is, how much is that personality from a programming standpoint versus things like programming standpoint and little errors and glitches that make up that droid's, you know, personality? You know, like when you look at C-3PO, you know, there's a joke that he talks more than any other protocol droid. Why? Well, he wasn't actually manufactured at a plant, you know, at a droid plant and given the right programming. He was programmed by an 8-year-old kid who wanted to have a conversation and a friend to talk. So it makes sense for C-3PO to have this bumbling kind of exterior to talk. R2-D2 on the flip side, you know, started out, at least as we see, as a repair droid for a Naboo starfighter. But he becomes something that's kind of sassy, you know, and which, you know, it's R2-D2. So it's one. It's interesting to think about Cassian's relationship with K2 in the sense that K2 has a very dry sense of humor. Is that something that the droid has picked up over time, or is that something with the conflict of the programming, the slicing that Cassian did, or is that just Cassian's own humor kind of wearing off, and we see it brought forth through K2? So I do like that he has this unique relationship with his droid, kind of like Luke Skywalker with R2 or Rey with BB-8 and, you know, Poe with BB-8. So it's kind of a nice partnership, if you will, that we've seen in all the other films. So in Rogue One, in K2, I feel he's the droid in that film, which is great. And he quickly became one of my favorite droids. It doesn't hurt that Alan Tudyk was the voice of K2. Yeah. And Cassian was this kind of, you know, stern, you know, intelligence officer. But I also want to talk about Cassian's relationship with Jyn Erso, which was very strained at first. You know, Cassian was very on point. You know, Cassian was set to go on a mission by General Draven. And, you know, the mission was to go ahead and take her to find the person who got a message from her father. And he does that. And then his next mission details is to kill her father. So, you know, he quickly has to make a decision. Who is this Jyn Erso? And does he trust her enough to kind of disobey orders? Because when we first meet Cassian, he actually goes through and kills somebody. You know, kills an informant of his, which is really kind of interesting because you never see that type of dark side stuff with the Rebellion. You always see it with the Empire abusing power and stuff, but you never see, you know, the Rebels having to make those hard decisions too. But obviously, Rogue One, this is war. This is kind of what happens. Like, no side is free from, you know, blood and, you know, if you will. What do you think about Cassian and Jyn on that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, just the idea of showing Cassian willing to do things that we've not really seen in the Star Wars universe prior to now. Like, a lot of what we see in, like, the original trilogy, and even to an extent in the prequel trilogy, was glossed over, quite family-friendly. But, like, Rogue One was a war film, like, through and through. So it was interesting to finally get a character that, no matter what, would do anything to protect not only his intelligence that he had, in order to return back to the Rebel Alliance and therefore give them an edge in what was coming up. But also, I'm going to sound terrible, cutting out the dead weight that would undoubtedly get him caught. Because at the point he's at, he's like weighing up his options. He can try and save this person, but if he does, chances are, neither of them are getting out. Whereas if... it's a really odd place to be in, because he kills him, he doesn't just abandon him. Which was a very interesting choice for me, because it suggests this idea that, like, he knew that if he left his informant to get caught, that they would break under potentially interrogation and give everything up. So it was just, it was not only a move that he made to preserve his own safety and intelligence in order to get the information where it needed to go and get out of that situation, it was also doing absolutely everything that he possibly could to protect that intelligence that he had. And it's a lot of stuff that you see with, like, spies and the spy genre and anything like that, because that's it. That's their role. Protect the information that they have at all costs, even if that cost is human life. So, yeah, it was really interesting to see Star Wars go in that direction, because we haven't really seen that before, necessarily. It's not to say we haven't seen characters killing other characters, but not in this way, not an ally, not a betrayal like that. Or at least a betrayal of trust from that perspective. But for Cassian, it was just an assassin. So, and he even talks later in the film about, like, him and some of the other people that go down with Rogue One, like, the things that they've done for the rebellion are things that maybe wouldn't make other people sleep so well at night.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. You know, Cassian is, you know, we were talking about Cassian and Jin, but Cassian has done things that are kind of questionable. It's like, is this the right thing or wrong thing? And, I'm trying to pull the exact quote real quick from Dravitz, from Draven, his quote. But he does say that Cassian is, what is it? Oh, geez, now I can't find it. But he's one of the finest intelligence officers that the Rebellion, or the Republic, I guess it is the Rebellion, the Alliance has ever had. And that is definitely something, if you're going to be an undercover Alliance, officer going into, different situations that are going to put you in trouble, you have to be able to make those decisions. Does the ends justify the, does the means justify the end, your end goal and stuff? And in this case, he killed Tivik, who we saw in the beginning of Rogue One, because he tells him about Saw Gerrera's plan or information about the Death Star. So, he had to do that. Otherwise, Cassian would have been captured by the stormtroopers who kind of questioned him. So, it's definitely something that's interesting.
But the other thing that it sets up is this idea of, realistically speaking, he's a character that we're supposed to be able to trust, because what he's doing is for the rebellion. We may not necessarily agree with his, the means to the end, but what he's doing is for the rebellion. So, though we may be uncomfortable with what he's doing, he's doing things for the good of the rebellion. Therefore, it's like this really interesting moral conflict that it sets up, which also
it's
does
like
a
it's
lot.
Like Saw Gerrera himself too, who is a little more extreme.
Yeah. I mean, Saw Gerrera is more terrorist, whereas I feel like Cassian could more accurately be described as an assassin, I guess, if it comes down to it. But it really does set up the dynamic with Jin immediately, because he's basically silver-tongued, but will use that to his advantage in order to get the upper hand and move himself into position the way that he needs to. He is quite cordial with Jin. He doesn't necessarily entirely trust her, fairly upfront with her, but he's still quite charming. And so Jin is fairly at ease with him, especially knowing that Cassian is part of the rebellion. But it means that when it comes down to it, Cassian can maneuver himself into a position to be able to take out Galen Erso, because he can basically just maneuver his way through everything. And it's just really interesting how that first scene with Tivik sets that up. On the one hand, we should trust him because what he's doing is for the good of the rebellion. However, what he's willing to do for the rebellion in order to protect it and to make sure that things go according to plan is maybe not in line with what we've expected of our heroes. Like, it's far more complex than I think we've had in some of the other Star Wars films, which I thought was incredibly interesting for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Like, that's where Cassian is, just this kind of deep layered character. I do want to talk about him also as him taking on the title of Fulcrum. You know, being this intelligence officer, now we don't really see much of his past. And this is why I'm really excited in season 4 of Rebels to see if Cassian and, you know, K2 make an appearance. They might, because they are in that area. You know, they're in that time frame and everything. So I'd be really excited to see them make an appearance, especially since we no longer have Ahsoka as Fulcrum. We no longer have Callus as Fulcrum. And, you know, we know he had this title of Fulcrum also. So I'm wondering if Fulcrum was just a generic name for all intelligence officers, or if it's a name given to intelligence officers that are passing information to a specific rebel cell, because we've seen Fulcrum used in conjunction with our rebels that we see in Star Wars Rebels. What do you think about that, Danya?
I mean, I would imagine that it's a very specific role, mostly because it would get very confusing, but I feel like for the Rebel Alliance, it wouldn't necessarily be so confusing. All they know is that there are undercover agents under the codename Fulcrum that are feeding them intelligence from different areas. So I don't think it necessarily matters to the Rebel Alliance who Fulcrum is, because as long as the intelligence is good, even if it's multiple people from multiple places, doesn't really matter. I mean, if they're put undercover by certain high-up agents, then obviously they would know their identity, etc., etc. But I feel like on the whole, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's 1 or 100 people. What's interesting about it is if there is a network of Fulcrum, but the Empire doesn't know it, they think it's just one person operating under this code name, and they're not going to know otherwise. If there's a whole network of them, and there's information just leaking everywhere, then it's far more difficult, if there's many of them, for them to prevent it. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's, like, multiple in operation and active at exactly the same time using exactly the same codename with no real differentiators between them. But I feel like for the Rebellion, it wouldn't matter. And on the side of, like, confusing the heck out of the Empire, it would really be quite successful. Because if they've got information leaking from one side under Fulcrum, and then suddenly they're in a completely different place, that I feel like would be a very difficult thing for them to pin down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. You know, just being able to... I don't know. Sorry, I'm lost on that. God.
What? What? Is something confusing about it, or...
No, I just didn't know how to respond to that. Yeah. I was going to say something. I'm like, no, I don't really have anything to say, and I'm not going to say anything for the sake of Spain. You know, Cassian, like I said, the downside to Cassian Andor is we really just don't have that much information about him. But I really want to see more pop up. Like, he did pop up in, like I said, Rebel Rising. There's a couple junior novels where he's in it, but they're essentially rehashing of the stories. He's in the Star Wars The Force Arena. He's also in Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes game, but there's no, like, story or anything told for him. So, you know, I don't know. Like, Cassian is just one of those characters who I instantly kind of liked, at least myself. I also like his outfit, too, his costuming. Like, it's very boots on the ground, kind of, like, just rebel soldier. Like, he could be anybody, but he obviously is someone who has interacted with Mon Mothma and interacted with, you know, the higher ups. And like I said, all the people in the Rebellion kind of know who he is, because he becomes a pivotal role. Like, I do like that he has, like, when you look at his questionable judgment, he decides not to shoot Galen Erso. Like, even though that's his direct orders, he actively goes against them, which I think is nice, because he didn't, I don't think he was planning to go against them at first, but I think it's one of those things, as he thought about it, it was, you know, something he kind of watched the scene play out. He saw Jin go beyond what she was supposed to do, be up there with her father. And I think he kind of just waited and seen, you know, waited and saw kind of what happened, included seeing that Galen was going to give his life to protect the rest of his, you know, the rest of the scientists who are working on the Death Star. So I think he kind of, he does have, you know, his own moral compass, even if it's something kind of a little bit dirtier moral compass than you would have with, you know, the typical Luke Skywalker farm boy from Tatooine, save the day, Jedi Knight type moral compass. But, you know, he also has this interesting relationship with Baze and Bodhi and Churrit. You know, with Baze and Churrit, they both kind of see him for who he is. And I think that also is what made him change his mind from shooting Jin. Like, they see through him. Like, he's not hiding who he is. Whereas Bodhi, you know, he actually is the one who rescues Bodhi because he has that mission. And I think he kind of builds a relationship with Bodhi, because, like, I rewatched Rogue One not too long ago, and he puts Bodhi in charge of the shuttle, the Rogue One shuttle, if you will, once they land, so him and Jin can go sneak in, and he puts a lot of faith in Bodhi, who, you know, he knows has defected from the Empire. So I think he's almost an optimist without being an optimist. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, I mean, he's got a certain amount of optimism to him, but he's fairly realistic about it. So yeah, he's got hope, but it's not unrealistic hope.
It's not unrealistic hope. You're right. He's got hope. It's not unrealistic. And I think it's also, there's a bit of, like, you know, he's a bit jaded, if you will, because, you know, he snaps at Jin at one time in the film talking about how he's been doing this since he was 6 years old. You know, Jin's been doing it for the same amount of time, except she ran away from it at one point. He didn't. You know, he says, "Setting the rebellion is real for you. Some of us live it. I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old," was the exact quote. Like, that line right there, you know, I think he's jealous almost of Jin. Like, I think he's jealous of that she was able to forget about it for a while. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't know. Like, I just feel like he's almost jealous of her having to been able to forget about what the Empire's doing and what the, you know, what the rebellion is and what the fight's been.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that he's jealous necessarily. I think it speaks to Jin's privilege for who she is. I think it's more like he's very cognizant of the fact that his lived life experiences mean that no matter what, it's not something that he can ignore. But he does see that Jin has an incredible privilege where if she keeps her head down, keeps to herself, and just doesn't look for it, she can just ignore what's going on, carry on with her life. It was a very, very clever thing for them to do, to play up, considering the specific races of the characters as well, because it plays on that idea of, as a white woman as well, if you look at it from that perspective, a lot of the time we have inherent privilege where any kind of discrimination or any kind of fairly negative things going on, for the most part, we can ignore, we can put our head down, we can turn away, and, you know, it won't affect us. A lot of the time, things like institutionalized racism or, you know, the kind of sexism and misogyny that affects primarily women of color, like, we can overcome that. So There's another layer of social commentary to that that's very, very subtle, I feel, because specifically for him, like, there is something in Jin's lived experience that means that she has the privilege to be able to ignore that, whereas his lived experience means that there is nothing and no way that he can ever ignore it because it will always find him again. And I thought that was a really clever way of bringing it across without being fairly blatant about it. It was quite subtle. But if you know what, if you are very much up on like social commentary stuff, then it was very obvious the kind of undertones that they were going.
Yeah, I'll agree with you that. And that's kind of, and I think that kind of sets the tone for Cassian for everything, you know, on who he is. Is there anything that you think we kind of glossed over or we missed with Cassian Andor right now?
I would like to say that I really enjoyed the fact that they left the idea of the connection between Cassian and Jyn still quite ambiguous, even at the end. Like, yes, they got a lot closer, and there was no way for them to explore that further than they did. But like the idea that they didn't really make it blatant, and they did outright state how they may or may not have felt about each other at the end. Like the actual scene where they die, like there's something inherently powerful in that, in the way that they take comfort in each other, but the relationship between them is still fairly ambiguous. So you don't know whether they're taking comfort in each other because they know that they're about to die together. And that is kind of the kind of height, emotion and inevitability that drives them together. And particularly with like everything that they've been through the entire film, like their adrenaline, their emotions are running so high that it could almost like create this false construct of how they might feel about each other. So it was really, really well done for me. The other thing, please let Diego Luna touch Jabba. Like, please just let him go and hug Jabba. Please.
<Yeah. laughs> Yes,
someone find Jabba for him and let him hug Jabba.
Oh, Jabba. Yeah, just a little bit there. I remember him wanting to touch Jabba and see what it felt like. Yeah. So,
Yeah,
so I think that's it for Cassian. I do like, you know, Cassian is this really exciting character. I want them to do more with him because he's such an interesting character. I feel like there could be more novels, comics, anything that's tied into not just this Rogue One film time, but before, because he's been doing this since he was 6 years old. So there's at least 20 years of story. And we know he's going to, because he's been in the Rebellion, we know he crossed his path with our other heroes that were, you know, that we're fans of. So I'm excited to see, you know, what else we might have. Anything else, Tanya?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Danya.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.